Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm KJ Jones from Gadsden, Alabama, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 18th, 2013, episode 596. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Horses in the Morning this morning. And as you heard, we have the charming Cherokee with us. Her name is KJ Jones, and she is here because Jamie is on vacation. She's over in Hawaii for a week in her last pre-baby freedom vacation. And she posted a picture, Jennifer, on finally. We got to see a picture of her pregnant. She's been avoiding posting any pictures on Facebook. But it was a picture of her pregnant on the beach in Hawaii and looking very good. She just has a little belly sticking out there. And considering she's 7 months along, or 6 or 7 months along, she looks really good. So, Jamie, we hope you have a wonderful time there in Hawaii while we're here working. Good morning, KJ, and thanks for filling in for her on the show this morning.
Good morning. I'm honored to be here.
You know, we do these fill-in co-host things, and you know, it works out very well because we get to meet new people along the way as well. KJ was a guest of ours over on the Stable Scoop radio show a while back, and that's where Charming Cherokee came from because we gave you that nickname, and it stuck for us. We always just call you that.
I love that. I really do.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that because KJ is a Cherokee, and she's a wanderer, and she does all kinds of things and has done all kinds of things in her life, and we're going to chat about a few of those along the way. But first, we're going to find out what's coming up on today's show from Jennifer.
On today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, opening our week with a little substitute host roulette, and today's winner, we here to keep Glenn from going off topic too often, is KJ Jones. Welcome, KJ.
Hey.
And before too long, we will have the most dangerous woman on horseback and co-host of the Western Radio Show here on the Horse Radio Network, Tammy Surratt, will be stopping by with a host health update. And next up, we do a quick check-in with January's Ada Adventure by listening to a chat we had with some folks about Flask. And last and least serious, Wiley, the voice, stops by to regale us with the latest from Horse Nation. And happy President's Day, and more importantly, happy National Battery Day.
Thank you, Jennifer. Before we get to our daily winnies, I wanted to mention that Jennifer is actually on the phone, and so is KJ. We had a little issue here at the Horse Radio Network with our internet going down for about an hour this morning. We're hoping it hangs in there for the entire show, but that's why they're on the phones, is to make sure that somebody is here if I go off air. And when we told KJ this morning that if we go off the air, she has to keep talking, she didn't like that a whole lot. So Jennifer will keep you company if that happens. Regular listeners to the show will know that happens occasionally. Well, let's do our daily winnies. My daily winnie goes out to win number 23 for Black Caviar. More than 1 million Australians tuned in on Saturday to watch Black Caviar's Lightning Stakes win. And that happened they said there were record numbers of people at the track, that this many people have not watched a race in Australia ever, that Black Caviar certainly has ignited the nation, and she was off for a period of time and now came back and did this race. Not only that, she kind of set a track record with it, and I have the race here for you, so let's take a listen to Black Caviar on Saturday.
Racing, Black Caviar jumps well down in gate two alongside of Golden Archer and also Moment of Change. And Sham Express had begun pretty well. Go the Knuckle dropped in. Satin Shoes are showing speed out wide on the course. And so too Scent Express. And First Command drops in for the trail. They stretch across the track after covering about 300 metres. Black Caviar in control down near the inside. She's in front of Sham Express in the pink colours, Moment of Change and Golden Archer on the inside of the Great Mare. Satin Shoes is out wide on the course. She's being sold along at this point, followed by Go the Knuckle, Scent Express, First Command. Black Caviar completely in control. It's the Black Caviar of old, all right. Coming to the 200 metres, two to three lengths in front. Luke Nolan hasn't moved on her. It's awesome. She's clear then from Moment of Change and Golden Archer. But she's back, and the legend lives on. Black Caviar by 2.5 Moment of Change. Golden Archer's run third. Moods has trifected it, of course.
And that was Black Caviar. Obviously, she's a sprinter because you can tell the race is so short. But she ran the 1,000 meters in 55.42 seconds and broke the track record that has belonged to Special for the last 25 years. So it looks like she's back. The owner said they're not sure where they're going to take her next. But I guarantee you're going to see her again. 23 wins for Black Caviar. Well, it is time for your Daily Winnie.
My daily winning was to not say weenie, but anyway, I want to give a shout out to the amazing horse people of Texas. This is like my home away from home and my third time to be in Texas, and I just seem to keep gravitating here, and I just can't get over how you just don't have to go very far to make some of the truest friends of your life here, and I'm blessed, and just I keep my circle that I spend a lot of time around pretty tight, and for folks like the horseman, Dale Moulton, he's just a mentor in my life in all things horses and just living, and to Joffrey and Esmeralda Guy for opening their home and welcoming me here, and we just have way too much fun, and also Michael Richardson. He's always been just full of eternal support and true friendship, and he's just inspiration. It's just a humongous source of inspiration for me, and I'm right here to where I can just reach out and see these people that mean so much to me, and that's why I'm here. They just kind of draw me in here, and I think along the way of growing and evolving to being the horse person that I want, and to be where I want to be in life, it's these wonderful horse people that are around me in this state that have just, they just opened up their arms and welcomed me here, and I think we've got great things in the future, and I don't know if you guys have seen Michael work with horses. I know you have, but someone out there hasn't. You know, I highly recommend, you know, visiting Michael and just seeing him work, because, you know, he always seemed positive and supportive. That's what he does. That's just who he is. He does it for people, and he does it for the horses as well. And it just all ties together. And there's no way you just leave there just feeling like a different person. So that's mine. It's all these wonderful people here in Texas, and I'm happy to be here right now.
Well, I got to tell you that I received a note on Facebook this morning from Michael Richardson that said he's excited to hear. Let me see here. He said exactly. He said he's excited to hear my co-host on the show this morning. So he's a good guy. Michael, it's good. We need to have you back on the show. It's been a while since we had Michael back. I don't let him come back too often, KJ, because he has this incredible deep radio voice that just makes me so jealous.
I know.
So we try and limit his exposure on the show,
yeah,
especially beside me, because it makes me sound like a chipmunk. So we love you, Michael. So, KJ, tell me a little bit about you. For the listeners, you were a guest on the Stable Scoop show a while back. But for the listeners that don't know, tell us a little bit about your life and your horses and what you've been. What's the story of KJ?
I'm just a lifelong horse person and just constantly evolving, and I'm working towards being the horse person, the horse woman that I really want to be. But along the way, I want to be a positive contribution to all things the horse world and the people in it. It's a work in progress. It's plan in progress. I started out, I wanted to be a performing entertainer, and I've done every aspect of things in the horse world, from photography and promoting other people and public relations to being in the spotlight, from shoveling poop in the stalls and carrying water buckets and helping other people get out there into the arena. So I enjoy every aspect of it, and still into this day, you won't hear me complain if I have to grab a muck fork or what have you, but
I got to say, though, you're being a little bit humble. I mean, you have done all kinds of different entertainment in the horse world, but her last gig was getting knives thrown at her as she was one of those people tied to a board going around in circles. There's not everybody that can say that they have had knives thrown at her for a living. That's something that is exclusive to very few people.
Well, that's usually probably limited to angry married folks or something. I don't know. But I wasn't tied to the devil.
You've been to our house, KJ.
I wasn't tied down. And like Dan would say, he's like, I don't throw them at her. I throw them around her. No, he just he misses every time on purpose. So, and when I joined up with the show, and I would still do that. I would still ride the wheel if he needs help and everything. I just when I started helping him with the show, mainly the draw was the horses, and so I had my Indian horse act with Lucky Joe, and we started working on his new horse Gypsy, putting the tricks on him and introducing him on into the show to take the pressure off of Lucky Joe, who is 20 years old now. So part of that is to ride the wheel, but, I mean, also, Dan is a great teacher, so we worked on my trick roping skills, the whips, and now my favorite thing, throwing knives and tomahawks. I'm just so excited about it. I just want to throw knives and tomahawks at everything and hit it. So, I don't know. But I can throw around people, and that's great. Now, it kind of makes me nervous that I'm good with targets. Nothing, you know, I don't have to worry about emergency rooms or the police or anything like that.
Now, let me just say that if we're ever together and you want to practice, I'm not volunteering. Don't take that personally, okay?
Well, you can watch me practice, you know, on something non-living first, and then you can draw your conclusions from that. It's pretty accurate, really.
It's that one time. It's that one time that a bird flies by or your mind wanders onto some guy that I worry about.
No. You know, if there's a secret to that also, which we didn't really use a secret. If you stand completely up against the board, because when the knife is going through the air, it is it's still flying through the air up and down. So, it doesn't become horizontal until it's like 1 foot away from the target. So if you're standing ahead, and if it were to hit you, it wouldn't be anything sharp. But I haven't had anyone like stand. I haven't stand up the whole thing.
I like your theory, KJ. I really like your theory, but I am not willing to test it. Really not.
Fine. And the first person that stood up against the board, he holds the most world records ever in history of knife throwing. So I was blessed to have his instruction, Mike Banton. And while he was standing there, we were at his house, and there's like these deer. They come walking out of the woods, and they're sitting there looking at me. And so I'm like, okay, I throw the knife, and in my head I'm like, don't look at the deer. And I look at the deer, and then I throw the knife, and I'm like, don't look at the deer. So I look at the deer, and deer's looking at me, so I throw the knife, and the third one didn't stick. It fell, but he still, he trusts me. And you know,
tricks or not, I'm still not volunteering. I'm sorry. you know, I ate fire once. I think that's the closest I want to get to something that's remotely dangerous. So, and I had a beard. You don't understand. When you eat fire and you have a beard, that becomes even more dangerous.
Oh, I do. I understand. I see how it is.
Well, now, you also, as you said, you've been a photographer. You do all kinds of riding. You do all kinds of fun tricks with your horses as well. I posted a picture on our Facebook page this morning of you with a paint horse, and you're standing over the paint horse who is upside down like a cat. And, you know, I know you do all kinds of stuff. How did you get into the trick training?
I've always been interested in it, and it just, it's one of those things that it just came along the way. And when I started to really get out in public, I had a Friesian, and he was the toughest horse I ever had in my life. He was very challenging. He taught me a lot. He was a stallion, and he wasn't the typical Friesian. He was just he just had to be boss over everything. And I tried on my own, which was also not the best thing to do, to put the tricks on myself without instructions. I just had I just knew a little bit about what I was doing. But when getting out into doing the performing and entertaining venues, you get to meet a lot of people and become close. And so I'm that person that 99% of the time I'm going to stand in the background and I just keep my mouth shut and I watch and I listen. And someone needs my help or need me to do something, I'll pitch right in there and do it. And it's, I guess that's kind of how I've picked up some of the mentors that I have, or we've drawn to each other. And I've got to meet several people along the way who've done this, like we talked earlier about their circus, and then there's just performers, entertainers who learn their way of things. And so you pick up a little bit from everywhere you go. From everyone you meet, everyone you come in contact with, everywhere you go. And so I've been extremely fortunate in that area that I know if one thing doesn't work, I can reach into my bag of skills and pull out any array of 10 or 12 other different things. But and you would think my horses, like my mare here, my pony, I've had him for a year, but I was on the road all last year or most of last year. And, I've got the basics. I'm starting on the pony. He's starting a bow now. But, my mare I've had since she's 2 years old. She's 11. She's been ridden maybe 50 times in her life. And I love her. I can jump on and go anywhere I want to. And she'll lie down and stuff like that. But she doesn't have everything that, a performing horse that would go on a road because she won't go on the road. But it's still a learning experience. And I feel like I still have a long way to go. But we'll see what happens. I have to give credit to everyone that I've come in contact with since the first day on the road, and that we would be here for weeks if I had to name everyone that I needed to thank for helping me along the way. I'm just so grateful.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing many more things from you coming up, and we have someone on the line here who we haven't heard from since she had a major surgery, and our audience has been anxious to hear from her, and I know she's a friend of yours.
Yes.
Terrence from the Western Radio Show. I just want to remind everybody she was in a car accident here last year and had to have a follow-up surgery on the back of her head, of all things. And she's in recovery right now, and we just wanted to hear her lovely voice and make sure she was okay. So, Tammy, good morning.
Hi, Glenn. How are you doing?
We're doing great. It's so good to have you on and have you on a day when KJ is on.
Hey, Tammy.
I know. Hey, how are you?
I'm great.
That's awesome.
Well,
yeah,
Tammy,
Glenn, go ahead.
Tell us can you explain a little bit about what they did in the surgery? Not too graphic, but the Breeders' Digest.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Sure, and firstly, before I tell you about it, Glenn, I'd like to thank everyone who was a part of the benefit auction that grew to be so much bigger than I ever thought it would be. It's been a tremendous help, and it's paying for all my rehab, and it's paying for all my post-surgery stuff. And so, thank you to all your sponsors who have donated things and bidders and everyone who's supported it. And I've actually met some wonderful friends through the auction, Glenn. So
good.
It's been really good, but You know, the surgery that they have, and it's kind of really relevant for anyone who has chronic migraines and every day. This is kind of a new surgery they came out to combat chronic migraine and combat a neuralgia that I had in the nerves in the back of my head. So, you know, in layman terms, Glenn, they basically went in and they just cleared the pipes of the nerves and cut everything away and gave me a new haircut. So they figured if they gave the nerves a little more room to be happy, they wouldn't be so angry. And it's actually extremely interesting. But, yeah, if anyone has this is the same surgery they use for chronic migraines. So if anyone has migraines more than, you know, half of the days of the month of the year and follows a lot of other criteria, this may be a really good surgery for them. So anyone with that can email me. But the surgery is a little tougher than I thought.
They gave you a pretty scar in the back of your head, too. See, the only scar Tammy ever had was from shooting herself. So you needed one that had a
I do, and you know what I like to think? I like to think I have a T branded in the back of my head now, Glenn, because that's what it looks like. It looks like the letter T. It goes from ear to ear and then from the back of my head down my neck. So
I never thought about you have your own initial in the back of your head now.
I know. Good thing I can change my last name if I need to. Yeah, but they did give me a pretty good haircut. So I went down to the surgeons and they showed me the pictures. And they actually take pictures all through the surgery, Glenn, to show you what's going. And the very first picture that came on the surgeon's office was me face down. And it looked like, you know, the scene of the crime pictures where they have the yellow chalk around the body. That's what it looked like. So it was quite embarrassing to watch the photos. But once they actually got into the surgical photos, I was very intrigued by all of that, but it's helping a lot. And I've got letters and flowers and cookies and all kinds of things in the mail that I just couldn't thank everybody enough for. So the support has been overwhelming for this surgery. And I'm at rehab now and trying to fix the rest of it.
Now, do you think what are they hoping will be the ultimate outcome here in a couple of months after recovery? What's the hope?
Well, they're very, you know, doctors. They're all doom and gloom, but the hope is, and I've really been trying. I've asking all my therapists and all my rehab people, and trying to find one that will give me an answer any less than 3 months to get on a horse. And the survey has not been good. So I'm stuck playing with the horses on the ground. And but they're hoping it would reduce the headaches that I was getting from my head injury, because the bleeds in my brain had healed, but the nerves were a little angry. So that's the hope, is that I'll just get less migraines and be able to go on with my life. And because pretty much I had migraines every day before the surgery. So, but hopefully that'll change now, and I'm kind of looking forward to, at least I have a plan, Glenn. It's always good to have a plan. So rehab and then back on the horses. And I told my physical therapist, I was like, you got to hurry up. My really good horse that I shoot off, he's 15 years old now, and I can't wait much longer. it's been good.
Is there a hope that I know that, as a matter of fact, I had this discussion with Alina on the Stable Scoop show last week about you. You know, you're a competitor. You've always been like, you're a competitor in everything you do. It's not always healthy for you at times, but you are a competitor in everything you do. Are you hoping to compete again, or what's the story with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to get my state of Texas back. Start from there and then take over the world. Yeah, that reminds me of little Stewie on Family Guy or something. No, Glenn, I'm hoping to go back like I did before, but, you know, I'm kind of coming back with a different attitude. I'm still competitive, but, you know, when you live everything, and horses and competing is what you do from sun up to sundown, and then that's taken away from you, you realize there's other things in your life that are just as important. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Vernon, my fiancé, who's been just a trooper, it's probably a good word through this, trying to live with me with a head injury for a year. He's looked after me. And, you know, family becomes really important to you. And not that it wasn't before, but you realize that there's other things in your life besides that buckle or that next blue ribbon that I didn't realize before. So the accident has changed my attitude a little bit, and I hope to I'm still competitive, but I'll probably have a lot more fun just because I'm happy to be there.
Right.
Yep.
Now tell us, speaking of Vernon, he's involved in a little project that's coming up here in March that's changed location now. And
I know.
What we're talking about is the Road to the Horse, and they've changed the name of it now to the Road to the Horse International, and it's going to be at the Kentucky Horse Park at the new All-Tech Arena there, which is the first time it's moving out of Tennessee. So what's new this year other than the location?
I know. You've asked a very good question, Glenn, because just this morning we have released the names of the wildcard contestants, and these are contestants that are going to come in and pick a horse from their remuda after the contestants of this year have picked, and they're going to take that horse home, and they're going to train it all year. And then they're going to come back to Road to the Horse 2014, and they're going to compete against each other. And the winner of the wild cards then goes straight into the round pen at Road to the Horse 14 to compete against the other clinicians for the title. So this is the very first wild card you know, contestants that we've had. So, and they were just released about 5 minutes ago. So if everyone wants to go to Road to the Horse Facebook or Road to the Horse website at roadtothehorse.com, they can see these names. But there's contestants from Canada, North Carolina, Montana, Texas, Florida, all over the country and from Canada. So they're going to come and pick their colts in Kentucky and take them home. So it's going to be a great show, Glenn, and we've only got a few tickets left. So if people haven't got their tickets already, they have to kind of hustle on that because they're getting thin.
Now, is it the country thing again this year? Are we competing countries against each other?
Oh, yep, we sure are. Not so much. Well, you know what? Not so much countries, Glenn. It's. I like to think of it as guys and against girls because we actually have two girls this year.
Oh.
So there's going to be Sarah Winters, you know, that's Richard Winters' daughter.
Okay.
So
yeah.
She's going to come in as a competitor, and it's kind of fun because she was actually helped Richard when he competed at Road to the Horse. So it's kind of like a father and daughter kind of switch there, and Guy McLean's coming back to defend his title, and so is Dan James. And then we have another girl, Obie. Obie's coming in. She's 18 years old. She's done a lot of work with the Mustangs and another great hand. So Obie and Sarah and Guy and Dan, and obviously Guy and Dan are from Australia, and Obie and Sarah are from the United States. So it's going to kind of be an Australia versus United States, guys versus girl kind of hit off. So I'm kind of torn because I want the girls to win from the United States, and then I'm trying to win because Guy and Dan are, like, amazing. So I'm kind of, I don't know what to think of him.
KJ, I have to think that we both, you know, we know Guy and Dan, and they're definitely Australian guys. They are going to be a slight bit embarrassed if they're beat by the girls.
they're going to put up a pretty good fight. It's going to be great. So that's March 15th and 17th, Lexington, Kentucky. So I'm pretty excited to do that. And I actually just came back from Kentucky. Glenn, I went to the Riders for Helmets Symposium up in Kentucky.
As a matter of fact, Lindsay, who runs the Riders for Helmets in that symposium, is going to be co-hosting this show on Wednesday of this week.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Yep. I went up there and kind of talked about my head injury and my journey. And, you know, I've got a weakened skull and kind of had some brain damage. So some people might argue how much. I heard them called a brain bucket the other day. I'd never heard that, so I'm going to have to strap one on when I get back on my horse. So it's time for me to be a role model and protect my head. So I went to the symposium and had a great time.
I know it's not a normal thing to wear a helmet in your world, but I don't think anybody's going to blame you either. So
no, I think I've got a really good opportunity here, Glenn, to be a really great role model and show people that, you know, it's pretty hard to argue, Glenn, when you sit there and watch Courtney's video, or you sit there and you listen to her, or you listen to the people's stories at the symposium who have got hurt not wearing a helmet, and you really can't, you know, when you come back with an argument that says, oh, it's not cool, that's really not a very good excuse when you think about all the injuries and everything that could happen. And, you know, I had to sit there at the symposium in Kentucky and listen to a family that lost their mother because she fell off when she was trail riding and hit her head, and she's not here anymore. And you hear those things, Glenn, and it just the not cool excuse just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it's going to mess up my hair, you know, which is another one.
I didn't have that problem. I'm losing half of my hair.
It'll grow back, Tammy. You'll get it back.
It does work with me, Glenn, because actually I was so, after the surgery, I told Zonin I have to eat something good. I'm sick of eating, you know, that bland food. So he took me to Papado's, and I had my fuzzy sheepskin slippers on and a tube hanging out the back of my head. My pajamas, went to Papado's. And the waitress felt so sorry for me. She said, "Ma'am, you've really waited too long for your supper, and I'd like to bring you a free dessert." And I didn't wait very long at all. But I knew she was sorry for me, so it was kind of funny when I look back on it. But she was probably thinking, "Oh, my gosh." So why did she give it to me to go to get me out of there?
You know, why is this woman in my restaurant?
It was pretty funny. That was in Houston right after the surgery, after I got out. I was, a couple of days, actually, it took me to rise. But, yeah, it was a pretty tough surgery, Glenn.
Well, we wish you the best, Tammy. We're looking forward to hearing more from you in the next couple of months, and we're looking forward to you getting back on your horse.
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, gee, I'll have to send you a picture when I do.
Yes, definitely.
I'm excited.
Definitely. Well, thanks, Tammy. Well, we appreciate you joining us and letting us know what's going on.
No problem. Talk to you soon, Glenn.
Right here.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, KJ, you know Tammy, too. Of course, I think anybody in Texas knows Tammy. She, you know, she's a world champion shooter and just a very gregarious, outgoing person.
She's awesome. She is so awesome. There are no words how awesome she is. So,
now, did you shoot? Are you a mounted shooter, too?
I do, and I haven't. I'm not competitive. I just can't get in that whole competitive thing. But that's how I paid my bills for several years in Alabama. Train horses to be shot off of and then resell them so I could support myself and the horses that, you know, I performed and entertained with. And also because it went along with training mounted police horses, so we were already shooting off of them. So these horses also, we taught to go on the pattern and everything and run and shoot off of. And that did me pretty well there. So
I
love it.
Speaking of mounted police horses, I saw some pictures you posted on Facebook recently, and I want to talk to you about that after our next segment when we come back. First, we're going to take a break for for Omega Alpha, who is our title sponsor for the day. And then we're going to hear from a little recording that we did in ADA, the American Equestrian Trade Association, a couple weeks ago when Jennifer and I were there with a company by the name of Total Equestrian. They're going to talk a little bit about their products, and we're going to talk a little bit about flasks and alcohol that came up toward the end of this conversation because they sell them, and it was kind of fun. We thought you would enjoy it. And then we're going to be back after that with KJ here on Horses in the Morning.
Omega Alpha specializes in natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance, and they know how much personality and behavior can factor in the quality of our relationship, whether we're an Olympic-level competitor or modest weekend warrior. That's why they've created three different all-natural formulas to help us get the most out of our horse-to-human relationship. Chill Liquid, formulated especially for horses with pre-performance jitters, Chill Ultra Paste with the added benefits of B1 and magnesium, and Premare, the hormone balancer for witchy mares, and you know who you are. Look for all of Omega Alpha's all-natural formulas at your local tack and feed supplier, or you can visit them online at OmegaAlphaEquine.com. www.horsebackandcohost.com.
Well, this is Glenn here, and I am at the American Equestrian Trade Association show in Philadelphia, and I have Carrie and Liz with me from Total Equestrian. We're going to have some fun today talking about all the different products that they have, and we're going to end by drinking. So that's how I always like to end everything, so we're going to do that. But first, tell me, Carrie, what different product lines do you have at Total Equestrian?
Total Equestrian is comprised of three companies. We have Custom Riding Apparel, which is a breech company, and we manufacture our own breeches in our factory in Pennsylvania.
Which your beautiful daughter Liz is wearing some of.
She is actually one of the designers.
We're going to take pictures after, and they'll be posted on our Facebook page.
Unfortunately, she's wearing one of our white breeches, so it's a little bit see-through right now.
Oh.
She's embarrassed walking with that.
Watch your angle.
That's right. But we have custom riding, and we make show breeches for in the Circuit A for the equestrian rider, and it's a more higher-end breech. And then we also...
Used mostly by hunter jumpers?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, and then we have our fabric that's woven exclusively for us in India, and then we also do some sewing there, and we bring in a lower price line, but the fabric is still technical. In all aspects, four-way stretch fabric, so we have that manufactured in India. So we have a combination of a higher-end line in breeches and then a medium price point.
Well, let's go to Liz here before we get off of that. Why do you like wearing them?
Well, I'm the tester and the designer here. So
I assume you ride.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can say that I test them because there used to be a joke that every new pair of breeches I wore, I fell off in them. So I just broke that curse.
So you're the durability tester.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just broke that curse about a year ago.
Oh, good. You took lessons?
Yes. Yes. So over about, 8 years now, I've fallen off in every pair, so they are very durable. I test everything, also test out the fit, so they fit great. Have a lot of different people in the barn that have all worn them, short, tall, skinny, fat. We've got everything, you know, we've tried them all out, wash them, dry them, so, you know, I know that they're really great breeches, they're really great quality, and they're comfortable, and they're a really great price point, and I think that's something that we've found is different. We're still giving great quality, and you're not. It's something that everyone can afford, and we have a great line from more inexpensive to top of the line breeches.
And they're not boring looking either. You tend to have some style with them. Like the ones you're wearing today have
it's
called.
A white breech with a black full seat in
right.
it. So
you have the frill on the side too there.
Yeah, I have. There's a little. Right up here you can see there's a two-tone on the belt here, so kind of mix and match. These come in gray with the black as well. We also have a version that you have a plaid down the side.
Yeah, I was looking at those.
Yep, and we have a sock breech, which is the new one we've come out with, and that has looks like you're wearing socks up to about your knee, so when you take your boot off, you can have your own sense of style. So we can mix and match the colors, and that way if you're wearing your paddock boots or, you know, just shoes around the barn, you can still have a little flair.
The sock people hate those.
Yes.
Exactly right. See, we're trying to be.
Yes. It's our next market.
Are
so,
terrific.
Yeah, they're really great breeches. I really like them.
Good.
So then the other company,
yeah.
We, because we do all the sewing in Souderton, Pennsylvania, we...
So all these are made in the USA?
Everything in the upper end line
in the upper end line.
Made
okay.
in the USA. Our medium price point is made in India.
Okay.
Then we have Franconia International, which is saddle pads, blankets.
Really
coolers.
Nice saddle pads. Yeah.
Yeah. They and where we originally started that company was when we were weaving. We had a home textile company, and we were weaving our own fabric, and we were making a waffle weave material for Macy's department store, and. They were ordering bath towels and bathrobes from us, and just like that, they stopped ordering. They knocked it off and took it over to Portugal, and we...
You had all this material
we
left.
We had all this material. I was riding horseback with my son, who was only 7 years old. He's 28 now, because it was a lot of girls riding, so I went over with them.
I wish I would have learned that when I was... I would have been in Pony Club. It would have been so nice.
So I had... I must have had 4,000 yards of fabric sitting around, and I was like, what are we going to do with this? And we were over there riding, and, you know, just like that, the trainer, you know, we were talking to her about it, and she said that'd be a great idea to make a blanket out of it and saddle pad because it was highly absorbent. And I went to my first trade show. We made a product up, and I went to the first trade show in Valley Forge and stood there the whole show. Had a lot of people coming up saying they really liked it and didn't write one order the whole time. I was like, oh, well, that really worked well.
Was that 20 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 20 years ago, and then we just stuck with it and went from show to show, and finally the concept caught on. And
it's interesting, you know, not to get too technical here, but it is that way with product. Until that one person buys it, and then it seems to take off from there. You know, that's with horse products. Mm-hmm. You need that one catalyst.
Yeah, it's a very traditional market.
Yeah.
People are really don't like to step out too far in it.
I think that we're getting better at that.
I think so. I mean, you look at where the riding breeches are now.
Right.
That's a
They would have never worn that.
I mean, you never would wear
10 years ago.
Exactly.
No. Not with what you're wearing now.
White, and that's it.
You're right.
Exactly.
But I'm glad to see it. By the way, that's just boring. The whole old.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of more exciting things. So that's how we got started in Franconia, and we start out with saddle pads and the waffle weave blanket.
By the way, Jennifer wants to know if you're using if you're doing the cash to buy thing on Monday, because she wants one of the saddle pads.
We actually do.
Okay, good. She'll be over. She was eyeing that up today. It's hard to find. One of the saddle pads you have is a shaped. You have the shaped, the thin shaped.
Schooling pad,
exactly.
It's like
they're hard to find,
pack.
Actually.
Right.
Yeah.
And then a lot of those things will even custom make to people's saddle sizes.
Oh, okay.
We'll have a lot of tack stores that'll call in and say, I need something a little bit, you know, bigger or smaller. And because we're cutting and sewing to a lot of specifications, you know, we can just match exactly what their needs are.
Terrific. Now let's talk about drinking. One of the things, Jennifer being, my wife being a fox hunter, that caught our attention is the variety of flasks that you have over there. Now, this is under a different company altogether. This is
Mansfield Silver.
Mansfield Silver, which we've all seen for years. But one of the things I noticed, too, and I really like about Mansfield Silver is it's affordable. You know, a lot of, you know, most of your products are very affordable compared to what you would find in a high-end non equestrian shop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we try to give a value to the customer. And again, because we're doing everything in Pennsylvania, we can do all types of customization. I like the flask that you're holding now has a fox head that's been attached to the flask. And,
yeah.
We have all types of enhancements that we can do to decorate it. And that's really what a flask really represents. It's a gift that's given to people. It put you engrave initials on it, and I guess originally, you know, it was back in the Pilgrim days. They said that they used to bring flask over in glass and leather pouches, and it was whatever type of liquids were in there, whether it was fresh water and refreshments of any type. And then as we went through the
I like how he put that. It was all alcohol.
Exactly.
Nobody drank water back then.
Well, where it became really popular was in the Prohibition days. In the Prohibition days, and you can see the curve on the most of the flasks.
Yeah, they're curved, yeah.
It's to discreetly slip into your pocket, like in your pants pocket.
So it doesn't stick the bulge out.
And it doesn't stick out in like the Prohibition days when you wanted to hide it. It was a very popular thing. But, you know, they only have about 4 to 8 ounces, depending on the size of the flask. That's an 8 ounce. And
lightweights will get drunk, but if you're, yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. It's not made to, you know, a lot of people think you're a drunkard when you're carrying a flask.
I've
around.
Seen a few people fall off fox hunting from being drunk, so they must have more than one flask, is what I was thinking.
Well, Jennifer might know, right? No, you never have.
Oh, yeah, you have the smallest flask I've ever seen. It's a single shot.
Well, it's very...
yeah, it's the 5 hour energy drink
and
of...
And you notice, it's a very bad connotation because it has a key ring on the end.
It does, yeah.
So you don't want to be drinking and driving with your flask.
Had the flask hanging there with a cup holding you over.
That's a really great thing. But, you know, it's very decorative, and I think... you know, today a lot of people are just buying them as gifts because we...
They have come back, sort of. They were only for fox hunters for a long period of time, but I think more and more people are have flasks
yeah,
now.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's people just carry it around. And what it's really designed for is when you're carrying it with you and say you're, like, at a little party or at a dinner and you want to toast somebody, you pour a little bit into everybody's glass and it's a toast.
So what's inscribed on yours, Liz?
I have this engraved with my horse and my initials.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had it in college. So I do have a flask.
Yeah.
It's been put away
only
for a little while.
Carried orange juice, right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
To mix with my vodka.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
I had bigger.
That's right. And you guys aren't too far from the Alltech booth, which has the bourbon over there.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Make a great pair.
Yeah, you need to head over there. Well, this has been great. Where can people find out more about your products?
Our website is www.total-equestrian.com.
Total-equestrian.com. And that's all the product lines.
And all three product lines are on there.
And you can find it in most tack shops, too, around the country.
We hope so. Yeah.
That's why you're here.
We're trying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much,
well,
guys, for coming
for
on.
You.
This has been terrific. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, that was one of the interviews we did at the ADA this year a couple weeks ago when Jennifer and I were there. We hope you enjoyed that. KJ, do you carry your flask with you all the time?
You know what? I'm a lightweight, so the best thing for me to do is just go solo.
You need one of those little ones that comes on the keychain with like an ounce?
You know, I don't even know if I need to go that far. That goes with that whole thing. Sometimes I do have a plan, and my plan is to keep that at home. Just keep it somewhere else.
So you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek. We're here with our charming Cherokee KJ, who's filling in for Jamie, and Coach Jen is here producing as well. This show today is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Jamie is off on vacation, and KJ's filling in. We're going to have different co-hosts filling in every show this week, so we appreciate you being here. KJ, tell me a little bit about the Cherokee side of things. Now, and I want to clarify this. I call you a Cherokee Indian, and we actually had a lady that that wrote to us saying, you know, they're Native Americans. They're not. You shouldn't be calling them Indians anymore, and I'd like to correct her because we've had a number of Indians on the shows over the years, and they all want to be called Indians.
Yeah,
they don't
Indians
want to be called.
Right. Indians don't care. But well, you know, I'm also a mixture of I have Cherokee, I have Korean. So the way I see it, what I usually say, and I don't know how appropriate that is, so I'm like, well, I'm a minority. I can say anything I want, which I really can't. But no, that's perfectly fine. It just depends. It's with anything else, it depends on the individual, and it does not offend me at all whatsoever. And I say it all the time. So.
Yeah, and you know, the explanation I was given by someone who is an Indian, he said, you know, we were Indians. We weren't Native Americans. Right. The American thing didn't come till the white people came.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So tell us now, it's on your father's side that you're Cherokee?
It's on my father's side, and there's also some Crow there. It's just a mixture, and the Cherokee is more prevalent. So what we have done was, you know, I've done the horse thing, and I love the whole Indian history, the background and everything, but I'm just also, I've never been one to dig into my background to figure any of the, you know, my brain is so full of all the horse stuff and what I need to do on a daily basis, like learning everything from behind me, I can't even go there. But I had my mentor, he's more like a spiritual guide and really close friend, Chuske Denny. He really wanted me to, He really wanted me to look into my background and just take pride into where I'm from and where I've come from and how that could also benefit the people around me and to teach and to learn. And so after a couple of years, he was after me about it. And so I pulled up my genealogy, the lineage and everything, and I had to send that in, and they require
special amount of paperwork and everything to prove who you are and what your background is. And he's actually chief of Dakota, he was, and he was head speaker for all of the Indian nations. So, I mean, he's just he's very influential and very wise, and he is an elder to everyone. So I took everything he said seriously, and I followed, and I'm so glad that I did. And so because last April, they have to do a ceremony to be able to come up with your name and what you're called. You can't just decide, okay, this is what I want to be called. They have to have a meeting. They have to have a ceremony, and then that's how they come up with your name. And so it's not a little thing where you send some paperwork in and get a card. But he wanted to do these things for me, and he wanted to take part in helping me with my future and make sure that whatever direction that I went, I had a home. And that was part of this was also becoming a member of the Cherokee Nation of Indians. So I'm learning more as time goes on. He since passed away last April. He passed away, and it's been really tough because you learn to lean on folks for, you know, especially spiritually, and to help you, help guide and everything, and then all of a sudden you're back on your own again. And someone like me who's a gypsy, and a lot of the decisions that I make, the plan isn't all the way from beginning to end. I'm in the beginning of lots of plans. And, you know, an Indian will tell you all the answers are inside of you. And it's hard for me not to seek outwardly to someone older, to someone more wise, but it is true. It's true. Only you know which path you need to take, truly, and only you can really, really think in your own best interest. But that's how it's come about, and it's still evolving and growing. I'm still learning about it, and that's what I'll put forth in what I plan to do in the future with performing, entertaining with my horses, and teaching other people, and hopefully it's just all going to be one big positive message, and everyone can walk away learning something new and have an all new appreciation for all the aspects of everything.
You know, it's funny because we have Tammy on, who's Australian and out of Texas with a southern accent, a southern Australian accent. We've got you, who's Cherokee Asian with a pure southern accent. I mean, we got it all going on here this morning. Now, the Cherokee were really, really, of all the Indian nations, were the ones that I would say are known to be some of the best horsemen.
Yeah.
And you got that, obviously. I think you got that through your blood.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't stand it. Even as a small child, I'm outside and I'm crawling on strange horses, and you know, my family's looking for me, and I'm sitting on top of a pony or whatever, and they're screaming like, "What are you doing? It hasn't been ridden in 15 years." And someone else is saying like, "But how did she get up there?" But it was born in. It's there, and bless my heart, it's not going anywhere. And I'm either going to be successful at this, or I'm going to suffer one way or another. But I'm going to be happy.
Well, I noticed too, most of the pictures on your Facebook page are of you riding, and of you riding in bare feet and bareback.
Yes, I love rideless bareback, and but mainly if the horse will go without a saddle, which most of them will, I would rather ride that way. It's just I'd once ridden my Friesian. This was a few years ago. We had ridden up the road and back. I had my Friesian stallion out and my gelding, the really challenging gelding, which I could put kids on, and he would totally take care of the kids. But he liked to challenge me. I think it was just this thing that he had. And we made it back to my house, and the person that was on my stallion decided to ride on up the hill. So I'm on my gelding, and he's alpha everything, alpha over the stallion, everything. And I rode him up to the hitching post. And he decided he wanted to go up the hill. I was like, "No, we're going to stand here for a moment, then I'll tell you it's okay to go up the hill." So that's what we did. And as we were just kind of trotting up the hill, I gave him the cue to canter. And at that moment, I had Afghan hounds, and they barked at him. He'd known these dogs their whole lives. So that gave him the idea, I just need to throw her off on her head. So we're bucking up the hill. I'm in a saddle. we're bucking up the hill and we get to the tree line. He goes left, I go right. I look up and there's this humongous Friesian over the top of me. He lands on my leg, flips me over. And but I did kind of have a plan. You know, that's the theme of today, you know. But what I was going to do is he was bucking up the hill. I called my friend's name out that was on the stallion. I reached my arm out, and I had this whole movie in my head. It's like, he's going to reach out and grab me. He's going to pull me off this bucking horse and spray. Well, what I didn't factor into my plan was, you know, how big of a chicken that stallion was. He sort of tucked tail and jumped out of the way. So I'm hanging off the side, and my horse goes left, and I just go right on off the right. Fractured my ribs. I couldn't breathe. And so after that, it broke an egg in me, and I was afraid to ride. I was, you know, and this was probably 2007. And I'm like, every time I got on a horse, in my head, I was like, I'm going to die. I am going to die. And 2008, it may have been 2006, but 2008, I was on my then husband's horse. And that horse goes bridleless bareback. He's a Briar model. So everyone knows this. It's black and white paint. And he says, well, you know, just canter around the arena, the indoor arena. And I was scared to death. I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm going to die. But I'm going to do this. You can't tell me. You can't, okay, you should do this. I'm like, I'm going to do it. So he's sitting on some hay, and he's taking pictures and stuff. And so this is the big horse that kind of goes fast even when he's on him. So we kind of start out in circles, and then we get bigger and bigger, and we're going faster and faster. And I'm like, okay, this is great. I'm not going to die. And about a half hour later, I'm staying on the Roman team. And we go outside in the arena, and we're going around. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And one of the horse spooks and jumps out from under me. And
oh, no.
My hands. I'm laying on my back on this arena that had not been turned up all season, so it's like cement. And I jump up. He says, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "I'm still alive." And so Nick was like, "I'm ready to die. I am so ready to die. Just put me on horse. I am ready to die." So no, don't listen to that. No, don't do that. But anyway, it took me coming off a horse again the second time and being okay that. I the fear was gone. I wasn't afraid anymore, which I don't suggest people start falling off the horses if they have a fear. I help people work through that the right way, where you stay on your horse. But that's what it took for me. And from then on, it's like, I don't need a saddle. I don't need a bridle. I can do this. And it's the best part of it. That's what makes me the most happiest. So that's how I try to, I get my horses to that point to where, you know, I can ride them. And it's awesome now to see the, you know, I went to the Mustang Magic and saw how many people who's riding their Mustangs without a bridle, and they're using their leg, and it's soft. There's still some that you can tell needs more work, but, you know, it's just 3 months of training. And it's interesting how in the past few years how a lot of people are sort of gravitating towards bridleless bareback.
Well, I know there's a lot of people out there that heard that story and can relate to it. I mean, here you are having been, you know, riding since you were a child on anything and everything, and have that experience later in life, really, when, you know, this happens to you and you are scared. It happens to everyone, and
right.
It's not just something that, you know, you went through. It's something that probably 90% of our listeners went through at some point in their life, too.
Absolutely.
You know, some are, you know, and some, you know, are skate away when they take that first fall with just a broken arm or a broken leg, and so much worse. But, you know, you got back on and you did it, and everybody else has their own stories of getting back on as well.
All right.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a bit of a break. We have Leslie Wiley from HorseNation.com coming up. But first, we have a song today that you picked out and a band that I had never heard of. Tell us about it.
I'm so excited. This is Jeremy Leslie, and he's from, Gadsden, Alabama, where I'm from. And we're sitting in a sports grill having dinner, and we're sitting outside, and I'm eating my food because I'm extremely serious about food. I don't care what's going on, what people are talking about. I'm eating my food.
You know, I love you, KJ.
You know, you stick your hand in my plate, you will pull back a nub. But anyway, they have they usually have a band out there that's playing, and the majority of the time I'm straining to try to hear my friends talk. And when Jeremy Leslie was there, you can't help but notice he rocks the house, and it's this awesome mixture of, like, country, southern rock, blues, and I'm sitting there enjoying his music, but then he plays this song that we're about to hear. It's called Cowgirl Tough, and I'm like, what? So I'm just like, I'm throwing my nachos down. I'm like, who is that? I got to have that. I got to have that CD. So I talked to him, and he actually gave me a CD and told me that any of his music that I ever want to use to ride and perform to just have at it. So I just love him to death. He and Tempe are my favorite independent artists. They really are. And Tempe's like a soul sister. So I'm glad to hear her music throughout your show. And I'm glad that I get this chance to that we get to play Jeremy's music now.
All right, very good.
This is Cowgirl Tough.
Maybe if it starts. There we go. Terrific. I love him. Jeremy Leslie Band. Isn't it good? Yeah, that was terrific. And boy, Justin Boots and Cruel Girl must have been thrilled with that song.
Yes, and I'm sure Quentin was too.
In commercials.
I was asked to do that song for, it was like supposed to be an opening song for a TV show concept or something Clinton had, and I'm not sure what has happened with that. But if any of you guys want to look up Jeremy Leslie, he's on Facebook at Jeremy Leslie Music or on ReverbNation.com/Jeremy Leslie. I'd check him out. Great.
Very good. And speaking of Leslie, next up, and thank you, by the way, for picking that up. We'll play more of his music as we go down the line here. Speaking of Leslie.com here for her usual weekly performance. Good morning, Leslie.
Weekly performance. I like it.
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, gotcha. All right, there we go. Got to know. So welcome to the show. Of course, Leslie is from HorseNation.com here to talk about a couple of things that have come up in the past week on the terrific blog over there. So what are we starting with today?
Oh, gosh. Wait a minute.
Before we start, I have to apologize for something. Let me apologize for not finding the pictures of the half-naked girls on horses to post last week on Valentine's Day, but I figured you'd probably get too much hate mail, and
you know,
I would be divorced. So I thought I better let that one go.
I give you one simple homework assignment, and you don't follow through. You had this in the bag for me, but you're right. It's not worth a divorce, that's for sure.
No, and I probably saved you a lot of hate mail, so, you know.
Probably so. That's okay. We had a fun Valentine's Day despite the absence of your naked horse ladies. We had a list of looks like 22 lovey-dovey horses all snuggling up on each other. It was super super cute, super adorable. Horses smooching, horses cuddling. Oh my gosh. We had 43 candy hearts your horse wants to give you, which I thought was pretty hilarious. Basically, it was just a list of, you know, the little candy hearts that you
get
for Valentine's Day, and they say, be mine and whatnot. Well, we took those and sort of reimagined them as a horse might write them. So they say things like better call the vet and should have grabbed Maine and I didn't do it and
I love should have grabbed Maine.
Something is wrong with my leg. Number one money pit. Probably an abscess.
That's funny. Now, you also did one called Giving Up Stirrups for Lent. And, of course, everybody's kind of, even if you're not Catholic, you're kind of thinking about Lent right now because of the whole Pope announcement and everything. What was that one about?
Well, I'm not Catholic either, but I really like giving up something. I think it's a good idea, you know, just giving up something that you like every year and just going without it. And then you appreciate it more, you know, when you get it back. And I guess 2 or 3 years ago, I got this bright idea that I was going to give up stirrups for Lent. And so I did, and it was painful. But, you know, by Easter, around 40 days every year. But by about Easter, I had thighs of steel. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I could crush a small pony with my thighs. It was amazing. So I thought, well, I should do that again this year, and maybe some other folks would like to join me. So I did this post on Horse Nation. Sign up for Horse Nation's I'm Giving Up Stirrups for Lent challenge, and it just, I mean, I guess misery loves company because it was a hit. I think some 60 people signed up to give up their stirrups for 46 days this year, and we're going to have weekly sort of check-in support groups with some guest appearances from riders some famous riders. I can't give it away, but I think, yeah, so we're all in pain together right now.
Now, KJ, you'd probably like to see her give up the saddle and the bridle too, right?
Yes, that's next.
Yeah, I guess you're probably not impressed, but
we'll just keep it like small. We'll keep it like give up the saddle for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. No saddle November. Like, obviously keep that in mind. No bridle November. I'm gonna do that.
Now, Now, of course, he only wants you to give up your stirrups if your horse isn't a complete nut job. You know, he has to be trained, and, you know, really, you have to still be able to stay in the saddle. We want to clarify that.
Right. And there's, and for our challenge, our no stirrups challenge, we have some, you know, parameters. Like for me, for instance, you know, I've decided I get to keep my stirrups for lessons, horse shows, galloping, and jumping over 3 foot. And you know, I think it's fine to, you know, lay out some sort of guidelines for yourself. And also, you know, if you're not used to, you know, if maybe you want to start small, that's fine too. You know, give up your stirrups for 5 minutes a ride, and then once you start feeling stronger, give them, you know, see if you can't push it to 10 minutes and then 15 minutes. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a fun, mostly fun, next month in a bit.
Absolutely.
Christina on your blog said, I accept the challenge. I will drop my stirrups for the most part of riding through Lent. I'm adding to this giving up tortilla chips and Coca-Cola. I'd say, you know, stirrups is enough. Let's not go crazy. As I just learned about KJ, we love our food and, you know, don't get in the way of our food.
No.
Yeah.
I know. What have you got left to live for? Give up your stirrups and whatever.
Now, another article on here too, which on a little more serious note, was the USDA New Animal Disease Traceability Program. What is that, and what's the story there?
Well, you know, different states have different paperwork requirements, you know, as far as like a health certificate goes for horses. You know, like if you've ever tried to drive a horse into Florida, you've got to stop and show them you've got to have a health certificate in your coggin. You know, I've gotten stopped and checked for a health certificate in Georgia before. I've gotten stopped in Kentucky before, but it's real sort of, it's just not consistent through the different states. Like who requires a health certificate, who doesn't? And so the USDA is implementing on March 11th what they're calling an animal disease traceability program. It's for all livestock, not just horses. And, you know, it's sort of an effort to, in case there is an outbreak of disease, to be able to, you know, contain it and trace it. And so, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. But what does it mean for horse owners? You know, it sort of depends on where you live. If you're already used to, you know, having to carry a health certificate with you, maybe, you know, that it's not going to be a whole lot of change for you. Other people, you need a health certificate to cross state lines now, basically, anywhere you go in the states. The good news is, you can get a, they have a 6-month health certificates now for the East, I think it's Interstate Certificate of Veterinary Inspection. You can get a 6-month one there's different ones for the East and the West. You can sort of do that twice, get one twice a year, and then you're good. So that is what that's all about. One more thing to think about.
Now, Jennifer, you had something on this?
Being a government rule, of course, it's vague, but it says horses move between shipping and receiving states with another form of identification, like a Coggins test, agreed to by the shipping and receiving state. So it sounds like, once again, any given pair of states can agree that, you don't need a separate certificate, a Coggins test will do. So the rule that they made to make it uniform throughout all 50 states doesn't. So some states will require extra paperwork and some won't.
KJ, you travel everywhere with your horses. You've probably traveled every state in the United States. Have you run into constant problems with this? Has it been an issue? KJ, are you there? Yes. It'll be loser.
No,
yeah.
Has it been? It hasn't really been an issue. But I always have my paperwork ready. And of course, you have to stop in Florida. But I've never been stopped on the side of the road or anything in any other state. If there's an ag station that they want you to stop at, we'll stop and show them paperwork. And probably out of all of the traveling, someone actually looked at the horse. Of all these years, they probably actually looked at the horses maybe 4 or 5 times, and that was Florida. So, but, you know, as long as you have all your paperwork in order, you're doing the right thing. But as far as it being enforced or anyone going out of their way to stop us and to make sure, it's not been an issue. It's not been one of those things. But I've been prepared. But maybe it gets more strict as it goes along.
It's true of anything, though. You know, it's only as good as the people that are actually doing the regulations and the people that are checking. What do you carry with you, KJ? Do you carry a health certificate and a Coggins, or just the Coggins, or what?
I carry a health certificate and a Coggins. I make sure I have the health certificate if I'm going to cross state lines, but always current Coggins. And some states require, if you're from that state, like a brand inspection. And from, you know, being from Alabama, we don't have those. And then my horses were in Idaho for a short period of time before we came here to Texas. And you know, they ask, well, do you need a brand inspection? I wasn't even sure what that was at the time. But of all these years of traveling, all we've ever needed was the current Coggins. And some states are 12 months, some states are 6 months. So I try to keep it within a six-month period and a health certificate within the last few days.
Oh, right, right. Interesting. Well, you know, Leslie, I agree with you. I don't think this is a bad thing. I think it'll be a good thing as long as all the states end up doing the same thing, which
right.
we can't count on.
Which, right.
It's government. It's not going to be that way. You know that, right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, you posted something else, too, for Valentine's Day that I thought was a lot of fun, and we've done shows here on it in the past, and we've actually had a couple of the groups that you recommended, equestriansingles.com, have been on our shows, and we've had success stories from people who've met each other. So now, you did an article called Online Dating for Horse People, a Guide. Now, you're married, so did you test this, or because your husband probably wouldn't have been happy with that?
I did not test it, no. I just sort of skulked about and checked out the various sites. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it makes a lot of sense. So many people are doing online dating these days. And honestly, it makes a lot of sense. It sort of sorts out potential people that you're going to be compatible with, so you don't end up wasting a whole lot of time dating people that clearly you're not going to be compatible with. So this helps you kind of narrow the dating pool to your kind of people, a.k.a. horse people. If you're sort of, to save you the hassle of training an unhorsey significant other to put up with your horsey habits.
I love the one question you posted from Equestrian Singles. You posted a little questionnaire they have. And one of them was appearance, and it says very good looks. Did I mention I have a great personality, above average looks? And one of them is I resemble my horse. So. So we had EquestrianSingles.com. Equestrian Singles, we've had them on our show a couple times, and we've actually had people that have met on there and ended up getting married and things. And that always brought up the age-old question that us horse people deal with all the time is, you know, should you marry a horse person or not a horse person and all the things that goes along with that. But you found some that I wasn't familiar with, EquestrianMatchmakerDating.com. That's a new one for me. I hadn't come across that one before.
Yeah, you know, every site has different sort of ways of searching through everybody that's on the site. This one had places where people could sort of like write in what would be their idea of a nice first date. And you could sort of scroll down and look what everybody said, you know, and there's some of these
so funny. Like one person says their idea of a nice first date would be to participate in 2 days of horse clinics such as Pirelli, Lions, Cameron. I'm like, that's funny. I put a star by that one. That's real romantic.
Now, a question. So we got a question. Then there was, you get into the Western ones. This one sounds bizarre, by the way. There's one called horsedate.com. And that is that for your horses to date?
Is that no, this is not a matchup for horses, no. But.
Okay, because it does sound like a stallion service. You know, mine's black, you know, 16
right.
hands.
Yeah. That would be cute, though, wouldn't it? Aww. You should start that website. Matchmaker for horses. So horsedate.com lets you post owners or users post pictures of their horses. Like I said, you don't want to start dating someone only to find out on down the road that they own an ugly horse. You can start through that from the get-go.
And then westernmatch.com, that's for the on the western side of the house, westernmatch.com. You're right, 3 years ago there was only one, and it was equestriansingles.com, and now all these others have come into being. So, KJ, what we're going to do as part of the show, because you have no choice now because you're on the show, is we're going to fill out one for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Just at the beginning of the show, she said that she wasn't interested in finding a guy right now because they'll hold her back too much. So we need to put that in the description.
Well,
we need.
I can't even figure out what if horse person, non-horse person, because if they've never had horses, it freaks them out. If they do have horses, you have different ideas of how you want to keep your horses, how you handle your horses, how you ride your horses, and then you're still doing things separate or you're throwing things at each other. I don't know. I can't figure this out. I just can't. I don't know what to do. So, yeah. I don't need, like, an online guide. I need, like, a hardback book to carry around with me. And, workbook and...
Hey, Leslie, is your husband a horsey guy? Was he a horsey guy?
He's not, but he's tolerant. And I think that's the important thing is that, you know, they don't fuss about it. You know, they let you do your thing and just nod and smile. That's all I want.
Exactly.
KJ, so the solution is that's right. The solution is, KJ, find a non-horsey guy who's tolerant and very patient and train them up. That's the solution.
Train them up.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was trying to do lately, but I think he must have read something about how expensive horses were or something, and it scared him. And I'm like, yeah, I've been doing this on my own for a long time. The horses are fine.
Well, you know what? You know what? Guaranteed he'll come around if you also give up stirrups for Lent. Just saying.
Oh. Okay. I don't know.
I apologize in advance.
No, that's okay. Because, you know, there's only one way to figure it out. It takes a group effort.
That's funny. This is a great little article, Leslie, and we wish all the single people out there good luck on any one of these. You can find the articles, all of them, at Online Dating for Horse People. A guide is on horsenation.com. Thank you for stopping by, Leslie. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
They have the funnest stuff over there. They really do. It's a whole lot of fun. So you're planning on hopefully doing some training and getting some horses trained up at this point and hitting the road again at some point?
Yes, sir. I just, you know, I want to be on the road 24/7 like I was last year. Within 6 months, we had crossed the country like 4.5 times, and it was just a little much, and that's a lot on horses too. But I just want to settle in somewhere and base out of somewhere where if I need to, I get asked to do expos and fairs and stuff like that, and I love those. You get to see people you haven't seen in a long time and go out and perform in the arena and play with horses and teach and And basically, I want to slow down all the traveling, and I still want to, I'll have people want to send me horses, and I'll do that. I've got a friend of mine now that wants me to take care of a horse for her son. And so I believe that's the thing I want to do now, is just kind of settle in one spot and get a little program going. And that's part of the reason why I'm here in Texas with Joffrey and Esmeralda and Michael. And Michael and I are talking about some things that we want to do together and get some things going. And people, it seems that you have a lot more fun. Things are more marketable. And you get more accomplished when everyone works together and we have the same goals and you kind of have the same mindset. So that's what we're working towards. And whatever we put together, I know will be a lot of fun, and I'm just looking forward to it. But it's one of those things, we just take one step at a time, day by day.
Now, KJ, I got to ask you a question. We only have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to touch on this. I mentioned it earlier. I saw pictures of you in uniform doing some mounted police training. Were you a policeman at one point?
I was in the Etowah County Sheriff's Mounted Unit in Gadsden, Alabama, and we started that unit, and that was the most fun I'd had in a long time, is training the police forces. We did that for several years and also trained other mounted units and give them the certifications and things like that. So we trained for Mardi Gras and everything, and I didn't personally go. My favorite thing was, like I said, the training. I had to work at Talladega NASCAR and things like that and crowd control. But the sensory training was my favorite, and the horses are just phenomenal when you get them trained up and you're done. And so that was also part of my living with the training the shooting horses, was I would do sensory training on my horses, which teaching them to manage their emotions, and they would go on to be great trail horses for elderly people, people whose first time husband horses and things like that. So I want to sort of get back into more of that. That was fun. And home base, that's the main thing. Home base, have fun at home and play with the horses. But the mounted police stuff is what really just was a springboard to all of what I want to do now.
Yeah, I saw a picture on your Facebook page. Your main picture is of you guys all lined up with a helicopter landing right in front of you.
Oh, that's
and,
fun.
Yeah, I can think of a few horses that wouldn't hang around for that.
You know, they feed off of each other. When you have several seasoned horses out there and the energy stays at one level because the experience is already there, the newer ones feed off of that. And a lot of the horses, before we get to that point, you advance on up to the helicopter. At that point, we've done so much training, starting in the arena and then on into the confidence course that we called it, that at that point, if you've got the seasoned horses spacing between the newer ones, it's not as bad as you think. And if there is one that freaks out and we're in a line, you just got to remember to get out of the line, because of the domino effect. And that's what a lot of people, they lose sight of what's going on there, and it just goes right down and you just pull your horse out of the line. But it hovers way above, and just like with anything else, it's steps to advance. So it looks like it's very intense and would be scary, but at that point, everyone's just hanging out looking at what's going on.
Well, where can people learn more about you, or where can they find you?
Well, I've got my Facebook, or KJ Jones. You can find me there. I've worked on a website, and our server's down, so we're working on that now. And as we get more things developed along the way, I'll put that out there. And hopefully, when we're back on the show, I'll have more information to give you.
Okay, good. Well, very good. Thank you so much for filling in today. We really appreciate it. I wanted to mention to everybody that we will be back on Wednesday with the Wheel of Trivia. So please give us a call right after the show starts on Wednesday at 347-637-3238. We will have Lindsay White of Riders for Helmets on with us as the co-host on Wednesday. She'll be helping out with the trivia. So we'll be posting that on Facebook to remind everybody as well. We had a great time with the last week, and some people walked away with some terrific prizes. We have some new prizes on the wheel this week as well, so please do join us on Wednesday. Thank you, KJ, for joining us today. I hope you'll come back and do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
You can find all of the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com. You can listen online at horsesinthemorning.com and also on the mobile phone at horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I. You can also listen to our recorded versions on the Hallway Feeds app. If you have an iPhone, just download Hallway Feeds. Just search for that, download it, and all of our podcasts are on that app as well. That's it for today. We'll talk to you. We'll have a show for you tomorrow, but we'll be back live again on Wednesday morning with Wheel of Trivia. Bye, everybody. Bye, KJ.